By dusk they were ready. The pathway leading up the valley to the entrance of the cavern of the bees had been cleared and widened, and Lothar's labour gangs had carried up the cords of mapani wood and stacked them at hand. It was as though the bees of the great hive were aware of the threat, for as the sun set, its rays were shot through with the darting golden motes of the swift little insects, and the heated air trapped between the cliffs vibrated with the hum of their wings as they swirled about the heads of the sweating labourers. If it had not been for the protective mosquito nets, it was certain that all of them would have been stung repeatedly. As the darkness fell, however, the flights of disturbed insects vanished back into the depths of the cavern. Santan allowed an hour to pass for the hive to quieten and settle for the night. Then she told Lothar quietly, "You can light the smoke pots." Four men, Lothar's most reliable, bent over their pots. These were 5-pound bully beef cans, the sides perforated, the insides packed with charcoal and the herbs which Santan had pointed out to them for gathering. The secret of the herbs was a legacy to her from Uwa, and she thought of the old bushmen now as they lit the smoke pots and the acrid odour of burning herbs prickled her nostrils. Lothar's men were swinging the smoke pots on short lengths of wire to fan the charcoal. They reminded Santan of the incense bearers in the Easter procession of the Cathedral of Arras on Good Friday. When all four smoke pots were burning evenly, Lothar gave a quiet order to his men, and they moved towards the entrance of the cavern. In the lantern light, they looked like wraiths. Their lower bodies were protected by heavy calf boots and leather breeches, while over their heads and torsos were draped the ghostly white mosquito nets. One by one they stooped into the entrance of the cavern, thick blue smoke boiling up from the swinging smoke pots. Santan let another hour pass before she and Lothar followed them into the cavern. The acrid smoke had fogged the interior, so that she could only see a few paces ahead, and the eddying blue clouds made her giddy and nauseated. However, the dynamo hum of the great hive had been lulled by the smoke. The multitudes of glittering insects hung in drugged clusters from the ceiling and the honeycombs. There was only a sleepy whisper of sound. Santan hurried out of the cavern and lifted the net from her sweating face, drinking down draughts of the cool, sweet night air to still her nausea. And when she could speak again, she told Lothar, "They can begin stacking the cordwood now, but warn them not to disturb the combs. They hang low from the roof." She did not enter the dark cavern again, but sat aside while Lothar's men carried in the cords of Mapani. It was after midnight when he came out to report to her.
"It is ready."
"I want you to take your men and go down to the bottom of the valley. Stay there for 2 hours and then return."
"I don't understand."
"I want to be alone here for a while."
She sat alone and listened to their voices recede down into the dark gut of the valley. When it was silent, she looked up, and there was Owa's star above the valley.
"Spirit of Great Lion's Star," she whispered, "will you forgive this thing?"
She stood up and moved heavily to the cliff face. Standing below it, she raised the lantern high over her head and stared up at the gallery of bushman paintings that glowed in the yellow light. The shadows wavered, so that the giant paintings of Ilant and Mantis seemed to pulse with life.
"Spirit of Ilant and of Mantis, forgive me. All you guardians of the place where nothing must die, forgive me for this slaughter. I do it not for myself, but to provide good water for the child who was born in your secret place."
She went back to the entrance of the cavern, moving heavily with child and remorse and guilt.
"Spirits of Owa and of Hani, are you watching? Will you withdraw your protection once this is done? Will you still love and protect us, Namchild and Shasa, after this terrible betrayal?"
She sank down on her knees and prayed in silence to all the spirits of all the sand gods, and she did not realize that 2 hours had passed until she heard the voices of the men coming back up the valley. Lothar de la Rey held a can of gasoline in each hand as he stood before her at the entrance of the cavern.
"Do it," she said,
and he went into the cavern of the bees. She heard the clank of a knife blade piercing the thin metal of the cans, and then the gurgle of running liquid. The pungent stench of raw gasoline flooded from the dark, narrow entrance in the rock, and in her ears was the sound of a million bees roused from their smoke-drugged stupor by the reek. Lothar came out of the cavern, running backwards, spilling the last of the gasoline onto the rocky floor, leaving a wet trail behind him, then dropped the empty can and ran back past her.
"Quickly," he panted, "before the bees come out."
Already bees were darting about in the lantern light, settling on the netting that screened her face, and more still boiled from the apertures in the cliff face above her. Santan backed away, and then swung the lantern over her head and hurled it into the entrance of the cavern. The lantern bounced off the rock, the glass shattered, and it rolled over the uneven floor. The little yellow flame flickered and was almost snuffed from the wick, and then suddenly the spilled gasoline caught. In a whooshing implosion that seemed to rock the earth beneath Santan's feet and which hurled her backwards, a great breath of flame shot down the mountain's throat and its gaping mouth filled with fire. The cavern was shaped like a blast furnace. A gale of wind was sucked into it, and red flames shot from the opening high up in the cliff face, burning like 50 torches, illuminating the valley with noon light. The rushing wind swiftly drowned out the agonized din of a million burning bees, and within seconds there remained only the steady roar of the flames. As the stacked Mapani timbers caught and burned, she could feel the heat leap out at her like a savage thing, and Santan backed away from it and gazed with a horrid fascination at the destruction. From the fiery cavern she heard a new sound that puzzled her, the sound of soft, heavy weights thudding to the stone floor, almost as though many living bodies were dropping from the roof of the cavern. She did not understand what it was until she saw a snake of dark liquid, slow and viscous as oil, creep out of the cavern's entrance.
"Honey," she whispered. "The honeycombs are melting."
Those huge combs, the product of a century of labour by a myriad bees, were softening in the heat and falling 100 weight at a time from the high roof into the flames below. The trickle of molten honey and wax turned into a running rivulet, then into a flood of boiling, steaming liquid that seethed in the ruddy furnace glow. The hot, sweet stench of boiling honey seemed to thicken the air, and the flood of molten gold drove Santan back before it.
"O God," she whispered, "O God, forgive me for what I have done."
Santan stood by as the flames burned through the rest of that night, and in the dawn light the cliffs were blackened with soot. The cavern was a ruined black maw, and the floor of the valley was coated thickly with a caramelized layer of black sticky sugar. When Santan staggered warily into the stockade of Lion Tree Camp, Sister Emiliana was waiting to help her to her cot and to bathe the sugar-reeking soot from her face and body. An hour after noon, Santan went into labor.